Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Beyond the Red Zone, the leftist sports show that we do here on This Is Revolution podcast. I do want to say for the live streaming audience, I apologize for the delay. There is serious technical difficulties, not with anyone's personal device, but literally with the platform that we use. The link should be up for the special call-in that we're doing tonight for patrons only. That's right. Instead of us going on for multiple hours telling embarrassing stories that sometimes our parents see, we're going to do that behind a paywall because my mom is cheap and she's not a patron. Can't speak for Mac's mom, but I don't think she's a patron. So I feel comfortable saying or listening to you guys' insane stories that we said we were going to do. It was more difficult than it's ever been to set that up, but it's set up. It's done. It's ready to go. That being said, let me bring in the man, the myth, the legend, Mac.
Thank you.
Do we have celebrity David Griscom in the crowd? Look at that. Welcome, David Griscom.
David Griscom. Jason's typically got a rad shirt on during recording.
I'm wearing my Left Reckoning shirt representing the homies. My Left Reckoning tank top. David is a big football fan, big college football fan. And he's a Texas football fan, so you know what that means.
Oh. Because I nut quick.
That's what that means.
I mean, I have nothing nice to say about the University of Texas, but I love the city of Austin. I love Austin.
Texas as a whole is not bad. I say that because there's just so many desolate parts of that state. You're just like, oh, Jesus.
I've been to a couple spots in Texas, and other than Austin, I was just like, I could never live there. I'm too loud about, like, my politics. I'm too, like, Texans just bother me. Like, the minute when all this secession shit started coming out, like, Texas needs to go out on its own. And then you see, like, Facebook and Twitter posts pop up, like, hey, are they going to cancel my Social Security if we do this? It's like, yes, bitch. You're not an American citizen anymore. You're getting what you want. Hey, we got our own power grid. We can do this. Are you aware it fails?
How's that working out for you guys? Yeah. Look, I've enjoyed many parts of Texas. I didn't enjoy Austin for years because Austin for me was like LA Southwest, and it was always like too hipster for my own good. And I finally, you know, met good people there. We finally started having good shows there. But I really enjoy El Paso. Where's the place where you get the big steak?
I mean, I thought that was just any town in Texas. Like, I feel like they don't send anywhere. It's just big slabs of meat on a plate.
No, where you get the big, it's like you have to eat a 98-ounce steak and you get a free meal. It's not Midland. God. Is it Lubbock?
David says it's Amarillo.
I had a bunch of fun in Midland. I had a bunch of fun in Lubbock. I had a bunch of fun in Denton, Dallas, Houston, Beaumont. Name another city. Victoria. Corpus.
I've been to Houston, Dallas, which I will never step foot in either of those places again.
San Antonio? How can we forget San Antonio?
San Antonio is rad, though. I like San Antonio. But, like, Dallas and Houston, no thanks, man. Like, trying to drive there, fuck you. Okay? Like,
thank you, David. No way. David says Amarillo. David says Amarillo, Texas. That is the spot. So, I've played so many shows in Texas, I don't even know all the places I've played in Texas. And I've driven across it too many times to count. But
I don't envy you for that. Do not envy you for that. I'd rather take a transatlantic flight than drive across Texas. I mean,
in a Boeing jet.
Let that door pop off, and I'd still rather fly across the Atlantic than drive across Texas.
There's a real sick part of me that kind of wants to do it again, but a lot of things would have to align for that to happen. Like, I'd have to have Bitter Lake in its current iteration, and we'd have to have some guarantees, and we couldn't be gone longer than like 8 days. And I'll take that.
Oh my God.
But okay. We have to have those things in line.
I mean, that's so. Like, I did live in California down to right to the border. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, Jesus Christ, this state is huge. Like, why am I doing this? You know?
And you said, Jason, and then I drove across Texas.
But like, I drove across Texas I flew into right outside of Fort Sam, so like in San Antonio, right? And okay. I ended up having to go pick up a soldier that went AWOL, but he like popped up. But I was there for like a school, like another 5 weeks. And the Army is like, oh, yeah, don't worry about it, man. What we're going to do is we're going to put you in the next class. But you're going to go drive a military vehicle with an escort and pick this kid up. And I'm like, where is he? And, like, I look at where Fort Sam's at, and he's, like, down here. And I was like, oh, God. This is – it's so fucking big. Why is it so big? And then, like, when I pick up the rental car from, like, Budget Rental or whatever, they were like, hey – make sure you have a couple gas cans now. And I was like, what? What?
There's some spots.
You know, and I was just like, and I did. I went out and bought 2 gas cans on like my government credit card. Mm-hmm. And that was like the only charge I had was gas and 2 fuel cans, right? And it was just like, dude, like driving through, I'm like, there's nothing fucking here.
Nothing.
And at one point, I passed through this place called Shamrock, Texas. And it was like mm-hmm. a single stoplight, and it had a giant mm-hmm. like butcher, you know, like industrialized butcher, mm-hmm. and yeah. then like a steakhouse and a gas station, and that was like the town. And I was like, where does everybody
was
live?
It was it the like, kind of butcher where you could was the kind of butcher you could like drop off your deer or something that you killed and it'll butcher it for you? Was it one of those?
No, this is like one of those massive industrialized like
okay
slaughterhouse type things, you know, like
okay.
So it was a fucking trip, dude.
Do you have those in North Carolina where if you whatever you kill, you can just like drop it off? There's like a guy that'll process it for you and like cut up a bunch of steaks and do ground beef.
Yeah,
like that.
I do it every October during deer season. I'll go back to deer. And like I'm learning how to gut my own deer now, so that's always nice. But yeah, like he helps me process it, so I'll get like depending on the size, I'll get like a quarter of it just like in, you know, cuts of meat. And mm-hmm. then I'll have like some ground venison made up. You know, a couple other things, and then I'll do like a quarter of it. That's just, I just dry out for deer jerky.
Jerky and stuff. Yeah.
Yep.
No, yeah, those things are like growing up in California, seeing those things in the wild, if you will, have always been fascinating to me to see those mm-hmm. processing plants. But before we digress too far into our love of meats, did you watch the women's championship game?
I did.
Women's
my friend.
NCAA championship game. Okay.
I made sure. I watched the final four into the championship. And I think it's safe to say that we found out 2 things, right? Caitlin Clark mm-hmm. may go down as the best women's basketball, college basketball player, right? Mm-hmm. And I think we have the next iteration of Pat Summitt. And Dawn Staley, right? And if, you know, chat's not familiar, Pat Summitt was the legendary coach of the Lady Vols.
Winningest
of Tennessee.
All time,
right? Oh, she was the Stanford coach that just stepped down, mm-hmm. eventually overtook her wins, or like her place at the top. But, you know, she had some incredible Tennessee teams and just won championship after championship after championship. You know, it was her and Gino Auriemma essentially for about a 15-year period, just winning titles. But I mean, Staley just, she recruits her ass off, man, and just puts these great teams together. I think this is her second national title in 4 years. And on top of that, you know, she puts women into the WNBA as first round picks, you know, so like she's doing a phenomenal job. You know, she was John Calipari early Kentucky days. And that's another note we can kind of go into is the fact that Calipari left Kentucky to go to Arkansas. You know, he mastered the kind of one and done recruiting. You look at the NBA, it's littered with lottery picks from Kentucky. But he hasn't done much in about 8 years, you know? And in the last four, he's had two first round exits, you know? So if I'm John Calipari, I'm getting the hell out of Dodge, you know? Like, you get out of the fishbowl that is Lexington, Kentucky, and go ahead and go to Fayetteville, Arkansas, man. Low expectations. Yeah, you know? You know, Nolan Richardson had a great run at Arkansas as the head man down there. But like, it's not, like you said, it's a football town. You know, so, I mean, it might work out well for him. I don't know. But all I know is that I saw a list of potential replacements, and guess who was at the fucking top, Jason?
Who?
Rick Pitino.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't look, Kentucky, I mean,
He's at St. John's right now.
Kentucky's a big job. Lexington is not the biggest city. But the Kentucky job's a big job. Another place I've played way too many shows in, Lexington, Kentucky.
Brave man. Can you hear me? Brave man.
Oh, yeah. No. Kentucky's fine. The Appalachians are fine.
Oh, dude.
They're fine.
I'm going to tell you right now, there are parts of Lexington that you cannot go to if you don't look like me.
Oh, there's parts of the world, Mac, that and you know, good people tell you when you're driving, like, where were we? We were in Alabama. What's the big city now? Not Montgomery. Name another big city in Alabama. Birmingham. We're in Birmingham, Alabama. There's a kind of a famous venue in Birmingham that we played all the time. I really liked it. And one day we were playing this other show in another, I can't remember where we were going, but in the South, everything is kind of close and confusing. And someone was asking us, oh, where are you going next? And we told them where we were going next. And they were going, oh, you should take. No, don't go that way. Like, you know, there's still sundown towns. Like, maybe the sign is gone, but it's like, no. Maybe you shouldn't go that way. Like, good people will always tell you, like, no, that's not where you go. And then we got maps after a couple of years. We were like, I don't like using navigation from a phone, where we're kind of always driving blind. Like, let's use maps, that way we can stay on interstates. Because when you take a highway, if you don't know, driving cross country, if you take a highway, you will go, they're designed to go through cities, small cities now, but there's nothing worse than going 70 miles an hour and the speed limit goes down to 25 miles an hour in some podunk town in the middle of the United States of America at 2 o'clock in the morning, looking for a gas station. It's not a fun feeling.
And that cop has done nothing for the last 10 hours of his shift. And he's like, all right, here we go. Cletus hit the
line. A whole van full. What's in here? Drugs? And a black? Oh, my God. Oh, happy day.
We hit the mother.
Jesus is risen. Yeah, that was not. It was not fun.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, dude, Lexington is a punch bowl, dude. Like, you just are constantly have rich donors up your ass, the fan base, you know, like, I get it. Like, honestly, I'm with you, dude. I wouldn't take that job. And I think it's going to take a name. You know, I think Kentucky's going to go after a name because it's Kentucky basketball. You need to have a name there, right? And Pitino's kind of like,
if you're not a name.
Yeah. You cannot be just a dude You know, I mean, somebody mentioned Billy Donovan. Oh, I don't know virtuoso if Billy Donovan wants to leave the NBA. You know, he left Florida because recruiting was starting to get really hard. You know, like Florida's a football school whose basketball program really came around under Donovan. And when you start having success, what naturally happens? You get more eyeballs on it. There's more scrutiny, you know, all that shit. Right.
And what happened to that basketball program?
I mean, dude, it's still after Donovan left, you know, because let's face it. Remember, he flirted, like he left and then he was like, no, I changed my mind. And then he like finished out his contract and then he left. Like something akin to that virtuoso. If you know, just know. But then he, you know, he goes to OKC and, you know, he was like the first coach of those like first power OKC teams. Right. Like with Durant, Harden, Russell Westbrook, you know, and I think he's done a really shit job with Chicago. And honestly, I think that has more to do with the front office making really bad picks and overpaying certain people and just running a really bad ship, you know, but that is what it is. You know, as a good coach, you're going to try and figure it out. But I mean, Donovan, I mean, just looks very unhappy with his life right now, but I think he wants another NBA job, you know, but I mean, if he takes Kentucky, I will go back to Mass and light a candle for him. Because I think you're asking for it, because Kentucky fans expect, you know, Elite Eights, 25 to, you know, 28 wins a year, you know, SEC regular season and SEC tournament titles. Like they just expect it, you know? So like if I had any coaching chops and I was decent, I'd be like, you know what? My job's I'm pretty good right now. I might look at like I might look at my athletic director, Jason, and be like, hey, random white dude who I forgot your name. You know, Kentucky's job is open and they were paying, you know, they were paying Calipari 8.5 mil this year. I'm only making 6. I might have to go take that job if you don't, you know, bump up.
Fork over the cash.
Yeah, you know. I mean, that's what I would do. I would use it as a bargaining tool for my current position, because let's face it, coaching contracts in the NCAA aren't worth the fucking paper they're written on. So like, why not? You know, but I mean, there were some other ones like the big want I've seen on like Kentucky message boards are they want to go poach Alabama's head coach. I don't think he leaves. I think Bama will just continue to write those checks, you know, because I mean, he had a hell of a season. But I mean, overall, dude, I think the tournament for both men's and women's games this year was phenomenal. You know, so I think for Iowa fans, because there's going to be nothing but a drop off going into next year. Like, it's
with no Caitlin Clark. Do you think she is? Do you think she's the team to that level that people aren't going to follow the team anymore? There's ton of Bulls fans that do not live in Chicago.
Yes, but she sets the bar so high, right? Yeah. And Iowa's just had this great amount of success with Caitlin Clark there. And they lose, like, I think, like, essentially 3/4 of their team to graduation and the draft. So, like, you're going to have to completely restock those cupboards, you know? I hope that it's not a, you know, just for Iowa fans' sake and for women's college basketball sake, that it's not a big drop off, and that a lot of other players that maybe normally wouldn't have went to Iowa now look at it as like, this looks like a place where I can go ball out, you know, and carry my game to the next level. But yeah. I mean, we'll see, you know, we'll see. But I mean, I think it was a great tournament. Watching Dawn Staley teams are great because she can play the, you know, 3-and-D and spacing game or just run you into the ground. You know, man, and I think Iowa had a hard time keeping up with that.
Who was the young lady that covered Caitlin Clark like a jacket?
Oh yeah,
like here, a nice here, warm winter blanket.
Yeah. like a nice warm winter blanket.
Sorry, Caitlin, I'll be in your pocket all night.
Dude, yeah, she did. Raven Johnson, thank you, Dr. Claw. She did a great job. I mean, let's face it, like when you're coming up against the giant, right, that is Caitlin Clark. Like, she's a larger than life personality, and her talent is off the charts. And you know someone's gonna have to cover her, you know. And I think last year, you know, or earlier in the tournament, like, you saw a lot of, you know, they were rotating players on and off of her to keep people fresh, but like Raven Johnson just stepped up and just was like, nope. You know, and I never heard of Raven Johnson before the championship game, and it's not a knock against her. I'm just not as plugged into women's college basketball as I should be. But yeah, man, like it was, I think she did a phenomenal job. Because like at any given game, Clark can go off for, excuse me, like what, you know, 30 with 10 rebounds and 7 assists, couple steals, you know. But I mean, South Carolina played a hell of a game. You know, no one on that team wasn't. Yeah, exactly, Eric. Raven wasn't intimidated. South Carolina was not intimidated by Caitlin Clark. They did not give a shit. And I think that has a lot to do with Dawn Staley's coaching. Like, Staley has, like I said, I think this is the next coming of, you know, Pat Summitt, like with these dominant teams and the constant churn of amazing talent and amazing players coming through. You know, South Carolina. And honestly, I'm glad for South Carolina, because they don't do shit else right in college sports. So
as a state, right?
Yeah.
Throw Clemson in there too over the last few years.
Fuck you guys. You all suck again, you know? But yeah, I mean, I think it's good for basketball though, because for a long time we had the two poles of Gino Auriemma in UConn, Pat Summitt in Tennessee, you know, and then we had, you know, Stanford under the coach that just retired, you know, she won 3 titles. But, you know, for a long time, it was literally be Gino and Pat, and then some other team would pop up and win one, you know. And I think it's good to kind of see, like, all, like, Dawn Staley, or South Carolina before Dawn Staley, you know, you didn't hear a lot about him, you know, but since she's gotten there, she's done an amazing job. And you know, she's setting up a franchise essentially down there in Columbia, right? You know, we're seeing, I'm hoping Iowa kind of sticks around, right? Ohio State women's basketball is getting much, much better. Very much outperformed the men's team this year. You know, Stanford is still going to be Stanford. I think it's going to be rougher for them moving to the ACC, where there are some really good women's programs. You know, UNC's women's program has been pretty good since Marion Jones was the point guard there. You know, she's more famous for being a sprinter and steroid user who went to jail, but that's neither here nor there.
Talk about taking the fall for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Oof. I don't care what anybody said. I don't think she did it for free.
I look at it this way, man. I will tell you, this is what I think.
Mm-hmm.
The International Olympic Committee is one of the most crooked and just shitty organizations in sports across the planet. There's probably only one organization worse than the IOC, and that's FIFA. Maybe F1. Okay, I'm just spitballing here. But, you know, the Olympics really leaned into this amateurism thing, but not really, because they allowed professionals to play basketball and hockey for a number of years, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then, especially when you are in, I mean, who pays attention to sprinting outside of the Olympic year? Not a lot of people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you know that my chance to get endorsements that are going to keep me flush with cash in the intervening years between Olympics depends on my performance at said Olympics, yeah, you're going to juice, man. And it's not like the Olympics did a good job at testing. They don't. There's a reason that the IOC doesn't run their testing anymore, right? It's under WADA, you know? And she did. Like, I mean, let's face it, her husband at the time, who was a shot putter, that dude got busted multiple times, right? You know, Ben Johnson in 88, you know, the Canadian dude who beat Carl Lewis.
Oof.
Like, dude was taking horse steroids at one point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just absolutely nuts. But I'm with you, man. I think
Carl Lewis also got busted, but got out of it.
Yeah, you know.
Very conveniently got out of it. It was cold medicine. It was a preponderance of cold medicine.
But yeah, I think she took the fall for a lot of people. And I think it's because she was the one that showed contrition, right? She was like, I just wanted to make the Olympics and do well. I wanted to represent my country. You know, like, could have been bullshit, sure. But she's the one that looked contrite at trial. Her ex-husband, on the other hand, was just sitting there like...
Dude, first of all, I'm not the biggest fan of feeling bad about that shit, because that's a weird narrative. This is going to sound really mean, that people that can't do stuff throw out there to feel better about not being able to do it. Like,
yeah.
in the 2000s, when Congress wanted to have that, you know, bring all those players in and ask them all these questions about, did you do steroids? And everybody wanted to lie and this, that, and the other. And everyone was trying to act like this was some great big disgrace to the sport, to children. Like, man, if you don't get the hell out of here, this is what everyone does to get some sort of advantage, to be able to do their job, to be able to continue to get paid, right?
Yeah.
I drank so much coffee, I literally cannot drink coffee anymore because it has harmed my body. So I can stay up, read all these books, write all these articles, do all these shows. Nobody gives a damn. Nobody gives a damn. And because, you know why? Because I'm one of many people that, you know, drink coffee. There's some people probably, you know, take an Adderall just to work their two jobs,
yes,
to live in their car on the weekends, to drive Uber in a slightly bigger city so they can pay their expensive rent. So this is just the world in which we exist in. So to act as if these people have to have some sort of higher standard, first of all, the playing field was level. Everybody was popping hot.
Yep.
The race Ben Johnson won, everyone except for one person, I believe it was the guy that finished last in that race. Go figure.
Yeah.
All at one point in time tested positive for some sort of performance enhancing drug. Same thing with Lance Armstrong and the Tour de France.
Oh, yeah. I mean, honestly, I think the only thing that made it to, and I don't even think it was like we are, you know, trying to hold these athletes to a higher standard. It's because in a legally binding document, like the collective bargaining agreement and the league rules, it said you can't do this.
Sure.
Right. So I think that's what it had more to do with. Like, I broke a league rule. I don't think she was sorry for using steroids. I think she was sorry for essentially violating.
She was sorry she got caught. I think she was sorry she had to let people down. I think she was sorry that at one point in time she was Marion Jones, the greatest women's athlete of all time, and now she's Marion Jones, a convict.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, you're going to feel sorry for all that. But we all break a rule to survive. Right. I drove back from, we went to L.A. for Ben Burgess's birthday. And, you know, Ben always jokes. He goes, I'm going to offer it, but I know you're going to say no, but you can stay on the couch tonight. I was like, nope, I'm going home. I got work to do at home. I'm going home. It's about 3 hours from here to L.A. And we're done. We went to a place called Highland Park Bowl. We're done about, two in the morning. And I'm like, I'm fine. And one of the guys, can you give me a ride home? I'm kind of on the way. Okay, give you a ride home. It's kind of on the way. And, you know, I was so tired driving back that I was so, like, sleep, that I waved to a car exiting the freeway, and that woke me up.
God damn, bro.
But I had to get back. I had to prep for.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. And DV, I'm with you. It does need to be regulated, especially in combat sports. the thing is we had VADA, the voluntary anti-doping association that popped up that took over testing with the UFC for I think about 8 years, and Dana White thought it was too stringent, so he started his own testing organization. So that's what the UFC uses now. But I'm with you. I think it does need to be regulated. I think it is dangerous. It's very dangerous to use, especially considering that a lot of these guys, a lot of these athletes, you know, they have a chef and a nutritionist and some, you know, some, the right people. But you know what they don't do is they don't use steroids with a, you know, the what do you call it? The oversight of a doctor, right? They're just like, hey, Jim, in the locker room at the gym.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, if you think, I mean, watching that documentary about Conti was kind of funny as, you know, but someone talked about Barry Bonds' trainer. I'm sure Barry Bonds broke his trainer off. It was really funny when you think about Barry Bonds and Michael Vick. That was kind of going on around the same time. Michael Vick's people threw him under the bus.
Oh, yeah.
They couldn't wait to tell on him. And granted, I think one, the reason why he got busted is because somebody had a parole violation. Mm-hmm. So, of course, you're going to tell on everybody. In Barry Bonds' case, I'm sure Barry had time to talk to, hey, you and your wife, go sit down for a minute. You're not going to a real tough prison. You know, we got good lawyers going to make sure that you get one of those cells with covers.
Yeah.
A comforter.
A very comfortable blanket, if you will.
And there's going to be a couple briefcases, and your children will never have to pay for anything. And I'm sure Marion Jones got something similar.
Yeah. I mean, dude, let's face it. Like, there was so much money being spent. And I mean, honestly, when we talk about baseball, right? You know, we all remember the very indignant Rafael Palmeiro in front of Congress. did not use steroids. And what happened 2 weeks later? At the age of 37, Rafael Palmeiro was tested and popped hot for steroids, right? You know, and the thing is, it's like everybody did it.
Like, you're absolutely pitchers.
Crazy. I mean, dude, that's Ken Caminiti. Look at him in his first few years in Houston. And look what led him to end up signing that huge deal with San Diego.
Yeah.
He was a wiry, you know, third baseman. And then he just became this giant of a man who I don't even know if he could wipe his own ass. He might have been paying. He had someone on the payroll that did it for him. Right? You know?
He was just like, hosing it off by then.
Oh, he. And he was the first American in Major League Baseball to invest in a bidet.
Yeah.
You know?
I got this Jap toilet.
You know, but then we see guys like Caminiti, but someone brought up Clemens. Clemens didn't look like a guy that used steroids to look good the way Caminiti
did. No. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Okay. Thank you for finishing that. Yeah.
But you could tell the way that, I mean, what led to Clemens being moved by Boston? Lack of velocity, you know, loss of velocity. Mm-hmm. He couldn't go as deep into games, right? Mm-hmm. He won the Cy Young his first year in fucking Toronto, dude.
And right? How old was he?
Dude, I mean, he was in his early 30s, but at this point, you know, Boston had written him off. They're like, he's washed. We have a power pitcher that is barely getting to 90 miles per hour on the radar gun. Next season in Toronto, after they move him, dude's hitting 93, 94, wins a Cy Young. I believe he was there for 3 years or so before he got flipped to the Yankees. But dude saw giant increases in velocity. You got to think, there's a whole academy, right, that is set up now to help pitchers regain velocity. And what is considered a giant success is if you can get 1.2 miles per hour more. Mm. Clemens suddenly found 4 miles per hour more. Like, come on, dude. Like, if you don't think
later in life,
yeah.
Look at what we got to see. We grew up. We're about the same age, and we grew up with players, as they got older, their play declined. It was sad. We got to see Nolan Ryan pitch no-hitters in his 40s. We got to see Barry Bonds maybe be the greatest baseball player of all time in his late 30s when he's understanding the game at a different – he's playing very smart, but his body and his brain are at the same level. Tom Brady, body and brain at the same level. In his mid – for Tom Brady and I are the same age.
Yeah.
We're both 46. So this guy, 45 years old, is playing – 44 years old, winning Super Bowls and, you know, playing at a top level. Imagine seeing Dan Marino being able to last a little longer as the game slowed down for him in his 30s.
Yeah.
Or John Elway being able to, you know, persevere through some severe knee injuries. I mean, the guy can't even stand up straight.
Oh, yeah. His knees are like, he has no knees. It's just like a, yeah. It's like a folding chair hinge in there right now.
It's like watching some of those wrestlers. So being able to see these guys play until later in life as the game mentally has slowed down for them and their body is still in peak shape. I'm here for it, dude.
Yeah. I mean, it was fun, man. You know, I mean, the thing is, it's like, it shocked me as a baseball fan. I'm like, Clemens in Toronto. And honestly, I think what pissed me off even more was when he was wearing pinstripes. Right. Yeah. I'm like, how can you start your career in Boston and be happy to be playing for the Yankees? Right. But then now it's very, very common to see that shit now, you know, like you maybe. And you don't see it so much in trades. I think there's still that kind of like hatred there when it comes to trading players.
Mm-hmm.
But you have guys that are like, yeah, I'll sign a free agent deal with the Yankees. I don't give a shit. You know, like they just don't care anymore. And I don't blame them, you know, especially when. You know, the Blue Jays in that period, they were trying to get – they become relevant again, essentially, since those, you know, the back-to-back World Series wins in the early 90s. And it did not work well. And they realized we're paying him a lot of money and we have, like, little to no revenue in. And I think what actually pissed off the Toronto market was when they added the red to the uniform outside of the Maple Leaf. And they made, like, the bill of the cap red and they had red in the jersey. Like, oh, man.
We have a super chat. Can you read the super chat?
Should athletes have to bust the bussy open? And are we supposed to know when they need to bring it back?
Do you know what the bussy is, Mac?
That's the man pussy.
Boy pussy, I believe it's called. But yeah, I didn't know what I called it, the bussy, and I was told no, you pronounce it like pussy. It's like, oh.
That just means it's fancy in French then, right?
She had to bust the pussy open.
Thank you
for that super chat, Bizzle.
Yes, thank you so much. I mean, it's an interesting comment. I mean, if an athlete wants to do that, go for it, man. I don't give a shit. What you do on your time and who you're banging, your business. You know?
I do want to ask you a quick NBA question before I pivot to some interesting NFL stuff.
LeBron's still the best player in the NBA. Oh, that wasn't what you were going to ask. Okay. Oh, Jesus
Christ. As I was driving back from dropping off my laundry, I did have a LeBron question for you. And this isn't it yet, but.
Would I marry LeBron? Yes, I would. If he asked me, I would do it. I know. I just got to be married to him for a year and I'm going to be taking care of the rest of my life. You know, I can be like all nice and clean at the beginning and I just turn into a total like slob and dirt bag. And he's finally like, we're done.
You're not taking care of yourself.
Hey, LeBron, 366, bud. 366 days. I need that alimony. Let's go. Let's go.
What I was going to ask you was. Do the Warriors have a chance to be the 8 seed? Not a play-in spot.
Man. Okay.
Speaking of LeBron, was it 26 threes?
Mm-hmm.
We're coming for you, nigga!
That's what the Warriors were saying to the Lakers.
And Draymond put 5 of them down in one half.
Are the Warriors saving – the best for last?
I mean, I can see that, right? You know, like, let's keep a little bit on the back end. But, like, the West is so deep. Why would you put yourself in a position to where you're potentially in the play-in tournament? Like, I wouldn't have let that happen. And maybe it just took, like, a while for – because Klay Thompson's, like, played a lot better the last couple weeks. And I think that's more of him figuring out how to play basketball again, because he's not what he was before the injuries, you know? And let's face it, he had two devastating injuries back to back.
Devastating, you know, injuries.
So he's learning how he fits in to the game the way it is now with that team, with his physical abilities now, you know, and he's doing a good. I mean, dude, he reminds me a lot of kind of what Steve Kerr did, which was essentially, I'm going to stand in the corner. I'm going to move and shift around a little bit. And then I'm going to do what I can so I can be open for a three, right? Mm-hmm. He had a couple of good drives through the lane last night. You know, maybe he's just feeling more comfortable. You know, again, he blew out his knee and tore his Achilles. I would be hesitant to fucking walk at that point. I'm getting a rascal, you know? Just.
I hope that's how he's getting around Oakland.
Yeah.
Or San Francisco now, probably.
you know, that bitch never lived in Oakland, man.
He did.
He did?
He did. He lived up the hill from my son's mom.
I just figured he and old Steph Curry and Draymond all bought like neighboring houses in the really right down the street from Pelosi in San Francisco.
No, Steph Curry lived in a town called Alamo, which is in the East County of the East Bay, and I don't know where Draymond Green lived, but what's his name? Klay Thompson used to go to the liquor store that my son and I would walk to every weekend for his Oreos and ice cream.
Oh, well, that's nice. That's a heartwarming story.
Yeah,
I like that.
There's a few people of note that lived over there. It was a very nice.
Hey, bud, go get your Oreos. Say hi to Klay as he picks up his, you know, his tequila for the evening. Hey, Klay.
The people that knew him around there, that was seen around there, had nothing but nice things to say about him.
Dude, he, that guy is one of those athletes that strikes me as just a genuinely good dude. You know, like, he holds the door open, like, you know.
He treats. But, if he takes you out, he treats.
Yeah.
He puts your money away, man.
Hey, guys. I don't know if you saw. Born into wealth. Have you seen my contract? I got you.
Don't worry about it.
See, and that's when you're like, yo, man, when's the next time we're hanging out? Well, you know, I'm coming off this road trip. I got 2 days off next week, the 20th. Bet. You're already looking at the menu. You're like, $64 Wagyu.
He does seem like he keeps his promises to hang out, too.
Yeah. You know, Steph right now, that's the guy that reminds me. He's a nice guy, but he does not keep his promises when it comes time to hang out, because he's like, ooh, out there on the golf course. He's on the golf course with all the, like, the weird white dudes, you know, the tech bros.
Mm-hmm.
Steph,
we got a great new app for you, brother.
Yeah. Listen, like, he's the guy who played golf with fucking Bankman-Fried, you know?
Did he really?
Oh, dude, he hung out a lot with him.
He
was one of the first athletes to sign on to be a celebrity promoter for.
I'm not shocked. And not to say he's a bad dude. It's just, you know, you hear tech, you see these people in magazines, you're like, I want to be around the next Steve Jobs.
Yeah. I want in on this. Okay, cool. But it's like, dude, you have people like me and you that have been screaming into the void on the internet about stay the fuck away from crypto. It's nothing but, you know, fake money. And then you and then you have it attached to NFTs, which we come to find out only increased in value because they did this thing called wash selling. You want to know why it's called wash selling?
Tell them why, Mac.
Laundering, money laundering. It's the same fucking thing. You know, like, Jesus Christ. And then, I mean, just because we're a couple of fucking, you know, dudes in our 40s on the internet saying don't do crypto, you know, oh, I'm Steph Curry. I got hundreds of millions of dollars. I can stand to lose 10 to 15 mil. It's not a big deal.
It's crazy because with you can tell people it's bad, and there's always that one person that someone knows through someone else, through someone else, through someone else that actually hit. It's like Vegas to me. I know people that win at Vegas, not every time, but they've won large sums of money. Doesn't mean everybody in Vegas is going to win.
Oh, yeah.
That's how I look at crypto. It's like, yeah, your friend got in early and cashed out early. So that doesn't mean you're going to do the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, and let's face it, the people that got in early, those are the ones that are sitting on it now. That's why like something like Bitcoin is still so valuable. And the thing is, here's the biggest kicker. And I learned this from an article I read this week. Mm-hmm. Bitcoin would be worth more, but there was this dude when it first like became a thing that mined Bitcoin for like a year, and he saved them all on like portable hard drives. Mm-hmm. Well, he moved out of his house, got his own place. His mom took all his shit out and dumped it, like put it in the trash.
Oh my God.
This dude, he's from the UK. He's literally been going through every trash dump in the United Kingdom looking for these hard drives.
Oh. It just crying every time.
Dude, and the thing is, he was like, my current value right now, I would have $1.2 billion in Bitcoin. And I sat there and I was like, oh, you dumb son of a bitch. Mm. You stupid son of a bitch.
Jesus. Would you hate your mom after that? Could you look her in the eye after that? Like, it's Mother's Day.
Hello, Mom. I'm bringing this card over just because I have to. Yeah. Now I'm going to go to the pub and get pissed because you threw away all my fucking billions, you did. Yeah, you dumb twat. You know, and I just fucking walk.
And he clicks his heels, doffs his hat, and walks out the door.
No, he's one of those cockney fucks in like the Adidas 3 stripe and a goddamn tracksuit.
Oh, Jesus. Fucking just looks like meth.
Yeah. He was an extra in Green Street Hooligans, you know? Like.
Nuri Yang says, what is that accent? Mac is from Middlesbrough with that accent. That's where he's from. If you want to know. From the Middlesbrough accent. Yeah.
Multiple parts. You know what, Nuri? I'm just trying to make sure all parts of the United Kingdom are represented when I talk shit about them, you know, here on Beyond the Red Zone. So
I found, before we leave, I found a clip of a quarterback we talk about a lot.
And Sam Darnold?
No, I didn't say I found a clip of a young man that is finally going to get his shot.
No, he's not.
Jesus Christ.
Minnesota's going to package those two first rounders in to move up.
To get what?
J.J. McCarthy.
He's still going to start.
And I'm going to tell you right now, dude, I got so pissed of reading those fucking mock drafts saying that. Mm-hmm. I got on Twitter last night and said, I don't give a shit about these experts, but there is no way that J.J. McCarthy should be taken before Michael Penix. Only one person liked it. And I'm like, the rest of you are all fools. You are all fools.
Oh, dude. Look, if Sam Darnold can't beat out J.J. McCarthy, then that's either an ownership decision where they're like, nah, J.J. plays. I'm telling you, dude. You know who had a good breakdown of Sam Darnold before we played this clip? You know who had a really good breakdown of Sam Darnold?
Matt Leinart.
I'm going to walk to Fayetteville. And shake a finger at you with a disappointing tone.
It better be a left hand, though.
You're going to break it.
just as respect for Matt Leinart, because, you know, a lefty.
Oh, Jordan Palmer was Darnold's coach, and he actually broke down some good and bad Darnold plays with the Niners.
Did you just really bring up Jordan Palmer
to me? One of the best quarterback coaches around right now.
Jordan Palmer, yes. To me? You brought up Jordan Pullman to me.
Yeah.
Jason?
Yes?
I'll fight Jordan Pullman right now. I will fight him. We don't even have to do it on the internet. I'll do it for free.
What did he do to you?
He exists, Jason.
You love Jordan Pullman.
No, I don't. Carson, I actually liked Carson Palmer. I respected the guy. Kind of thought it was douchey the way he got out of Cincinnati, but I get it. No one wanted to be in Cincinnati at that time.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like you forced your way to the Raiders, bro.
He threw for 5,000 with Oakland.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I thought he played great. He did some really good work in Arizona.
Yeah.
But that guy's knees are everybody. Like, dude, if we had to compare knees right now, like him and John Elway both have like
the same knee.
Yeah, folding chair. Are
both ACLs?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so like they're both. What I was surprised is I actually follow Matt Leinart on TikTok, and he's surprisingly very funny.
He's entertaining, yes.
But he just had hip replacements. Both of them.
Damn.
At like 40.
And I'm like 40?
Maybe not. Maybe late 30s. All I know is he's young as shit to have dual hip replacements, man.
He had some horrible injuries in the NFL that kind of derailed his career, too.
Well, he was never going to be a big-time starter. I'm sorry, he wasn't. And neither was Jordan Pullman. That's why he got into coaching.
Like, yeah, Jordan Pullman was never going to be a star, and that's okay. But as a coach, he's pretty good.
He's more of a tutor.
Wow. Wow. A tutor?
A highly compensated quarterback tutor.
As a tutor, he's really good.
I know he is. It just pisses me off. Like, why couldn't I have found a gig like that? Why I work like 4 weeks a year, pull down like $3 million because I'm consulting. Oof. Like, come on, man.
Did you see who he's working with right now? Joe Milton.
Yeah. Well, dude, I'm so disappointed in Milton. You know, I just figured he can throw the ball 6 miles, but he can't throw it 10 yards.
Yeah, nice backflip and 50-yard bomb, but it doesn't mean anything when you can't hit the screen. Yeah,
when you can't hit a screen or intermediate passes, like.
I do want to add this Broncos bit of draft side note that I read that they might take a corner, stay at 12, take a corner, and look at Bo Nix in the second round.
There are worse things they can do. Honestly, there are. I mean, I think that's safe. I think that's safe. I think it's smarter than bundling up your two first rounders and probably a first rounder next year to move up and take J.J. McCarthy.
Oh.
So, Vikings GM, if you are listening, which I know you're probably not, but you probably should. Don't fucking do it, dude. God.
The future's Sam. The future is Sam.
They've been saying that since he was drafted in New York.
Well, look, he had no one in New York. Sam
and
Jettis.
Listen, chat, we have another thing to ascribe to Jason. He's not just the Raisin King anymore. He's Sam Darnold's biggest hype man. So next time you see Sam Darnold, you know, this summer when OTAs kick off, you'll probably see Jason on the sideline just, woo! You got this, Sam! Sammy!
Hey, I'll be wearing a lot of purple this year.
Right? And then the thing is, Sam's going to take off his helmet. And Jason will be out there, like, toweling his head off. You look so great, Sam. You look so great. You're just fine. You're fine. You got this, bro. Come on. And, like, the whole Vikings front office is like, who the fuck is this? And Sam's like, hey, man. Tom had his little weird trainer.
This is my guy. This is leftist podcaster Jason Miles. / Pac-12 aficionado.
Blue Chew Sam Darnold. Powerade.
Sam Darnold looks like every bad guy in an 80s movie put into one human.
Sam Darnold looks like he had a good time in Charlottesville. Okay.
Sam Darnold looks like he complains to ownership if he has to have a locker next to a person of color.
Sam Darnold looks like he should have a locker next to a punter.
Sam Darnold looks like every time it's Black History Month, he complains. When is it going to be White History Month?
Sam Darnold bitched at Cap. Why don't you stand up for the veterans and the cops in this country?
I don't understand. And then he goes, I don't understand what the big deal is.
Sam Darnold played in San Francisco and has never been to Oakland.
Sam Darnold played in San Francisco and never been to San Francisco.
It's too dangerous for him.
Too many gays. He's like, I heard there's gays there.
Sam Darnold still thinks there's public bathhouses in San Francisco.
Filled with Orientals.
There's these Orientals and the gays. Can you believe that?
We're going somewhere with an Oriental mayor. What the hell? What do you mean the mayor's a woman?
You know what? I'm really glad I play in Minnesota.
Oh, strong dude.
Scandinavian stock here.
He is gonna love it.
The governor's name is not Gavin.
So glad to be out of California, bro.
Sam Darnold, you know
what'd be really funny? If Sam Darnold had like a black ass wife.
Oh gosh. Here, I'm gonna Google
Sam Darnold's wife. Sam Darnold is a police officer in the world of Lego.
Dr. Claw said Sam Darnold got benched for pronouncing the R too hard. No. To the whitest and blondest woman. Oof. Oh, man.
That's fair.
That's expected.
Fair. But if he was married, even if he was married to a fair-skinned Latina from Venezuela, I'd be like, I didn't see that one coming.
Oh, dude. Oh, Jason, I'm going to send you this picture. First off, her name's Claire. And I'm going to tell you right now, she's probably got a flat ass. I'm putting money on it.
Sammy, why?
No, because that's right up my alley, Jason. Listen, you don't get to judge me about my flat ass wife. What you need to do is towel off my forehead. It's perspiring into my eyes.
My massive forehead.
And then you hear somebody from the back, like Harrison Smith, just like, it's a five head. You know what I mean? Harrison, that's enough. I'm going to be your starting quarterback. I'm going to be your leader. You don't get to say that to me.
Yes, Sam Darnold starts every team meeting with a Zig Heil. Doesn't understand why the black players don't like him. All right, welcome to the... What did you just do? I stretched. No, you didn't. Jesus, Sam. But no, did you watch the Shannon Sharp interview with Cam Newton?
No, I didn't.
Shannon Sharp is horrible at these interviews with comedians, but the horrible has been working out well for him. But because he was a great football player, Hall of Famer, and apparently a guy that everyone got along with, right? John Elway was like, I will rearrange my contract so you keep Shannon Sharp. His interviews that he's done, that I've seen, the sports ones that he's done, are amazing. The Johnny Manziel interview was really good. Did you watch any of that?
I always watch everything with Johnny because, like, that was a guy I felt like the hype was, he was way overhyped, right? But I know
yes,
just from my own struggles. Oof. I knew. Oof. From, right? I knew from, she does look like she has a, you know, my friends, how addiction is. Oh, dude, she definitely does. Yeah. I put, you know, you're gonna have to show everybody here. But like, Manziel, like, I know the struggles with addiction, and I know how that will affect everything, like your behaviors, you know, like how you deal with things. So one, Denzel was on the other side of sobriety, and it had nothing to do with him going to rehab, because addiction is a struggle of relapse and getting clean again. That's just how it is, unfortunately. But when he came out and said, like, I have nothing to do, you know, with the NFL, I don't have a wish for it anymore, you know. Newry, yes, I can be Irish and hate on the flat ass. Because one, flat ass. I know some apple-bottomed Irish women, and on top of that, I am more into women that don't have the same skin tone. So I appreciate a little more tan. From Nubian goddesses to light-skinned Latinas,
save it for the champagne room, because that's what we're going to. To have your love stories in a little bit.
But yeah, like I was happy to see Manziel get clean and like understand that football was something I did, you know, but it became who I was, and who I was becoming was not something I wanted to be. So like I appreciate him. Like when he played in the spring league and the fan-controlled football league, you can tell he was just having fun. Like, I thought that was great for him, you know? So, like, when it comes to Manziel, you know, I will watch those things. Just because, like, he was such an interesting kind of character. You know, beloved in college, gets drafted, and it just is like, we come to find out he doesn't read the playbook. He doesn't go to meetings. You know, he doesn't do film study. But, like, he became the bad guy real quick. And I know a lot of that has to do with, you know, public opinion, how we feel about like speeding or, you know, the things that occurred between him and his girlfriend at the time, you know, getting arrested. Like, that's never a good thing. Those aren't good, you know, PR things. But we come to find out it had a lot to do with his addiction and mental health issues. So, you know, granted, like I said, addiction is a battle of sobriety where you are. I mean, I shouldn't say you are. I know some people that have been sober for 20 years. But, you know, it is a struggle of sobriety, and there is kind of the roller coaster of relapse and getting clean. And then when you bottle that up with the mental health issues, you know, like that, you know, those are two things that you that constantly will drag you down. So it's good to see him, you know, getting clean and all that. So.
No, I enjoy that. I don't think he was all the way clean in that interview, but I think he was honest. Still think he's got some problems. It's just me. I could be wrong. This is an excerpt of the interview. This is Cam Newton talking about playing at Florida.
Oh.
Yeah. Check this out.
Smoke weed before every game. Yeah. Did you guys party that hard, Cam? Damn.
Shit, we was untouchable in Gainesville. I ain't gonna lie. I was so disappointed in the documentary, because they left out so much.
What did they leave out?
Shit, Percy. Go talk to Percy. Shit. Go talk to Charlie Strong. Shit, go talk to Joe Hayden. You see what I'm saying? Right. Ask them the real. And they would have did that shit for free. Fuck all the Netflix deals and all that shit. Like, we need to tell. You want to tell us the real story? Shit, that was a very toxic locker room. Where we still had success, but damn, it was a combination of a lot of talent that was boiling over.
Right.
And there was times where it was just unmanageable. Right. And then there was also times where it was a thing of beauty, where it was a competition every day, every practice. Like, we competed. And even though Tim Tebow was a person who I wanted to be better than, Tim Tebow made everybody better because he competed.
Right.
That energy that he had, that screaming, that roaring, and that that's something that I could connect with.
Right.
And he connected with everybody else, right, even the stadium.
They win the national championship the year before you got there, correct?
Yes. As I was enrolling, they were winning the championship.
Yes, sir. Tim Tebow is already there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Chris Leak is a starter. Tim Tebow comes in. They got packages for him.
Yeah.
He's probably going to be the starter next year, unless you being Cam, and I know how you think.
Yeah.
I'm going to go get this job.
Yeah. But that's not how I was recruited, though.
Okay.
I was recruited at the minimum with your skill set. You will have a package.
You have a package also.
Just like Tebow
had. Okay.
And that's that wouldn't that.
Okay, wouldn't, okay, okay. Y'all won the national championship. A lot of Jason these guys Puzzle. Coming back.
I could do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm looking at.
Yep. Yes.
Can you? Okay. Cam and Tim Tebow had the same fucking game. What packages are they going to have for you, bro? You know, like rocket-armed QBs that threw it to very fast wideouts for big chunk plays, and you ran if your first read wasn't open. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I don't know.
Good God, man. He's, you know what? He's got that big hat because on the top of his forehead, he's got a bunch of cannabis patches just sitting there ingesting it through the skin.
I mean, he goes on to talk about he knew he wasn't going to play over Tebow.
Yeah, and I think that no one was going to play over Tebow because there was, especially even with Chris Leak starting that national championship game, right? And I was in North Carolina. People forget Chris Leak's from Charlotte. Oh, that's where he was recruited from. Yes. He and his brother were the two big fish in the pond at their high school. Mm-hmm. Right. And Chris Leak gets recruited. And at first, dude was going to a small school. He was going to go to a small school because you know what Chris Leak had that almost every other quarterback in the country didn't have? A fucking noodle arm. The dude could not push the ball down the field. He was a smart quarterback. He could read a defense the minute he got to the line. He could do that in high school. But he could not throw the fucking football, right? That's why you saw packages for Tebow. It wasn't just Tebow's ability, and Tebow, even as a freshman, was a giant dude who can like bowl through the offensive line, you know, da 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 da. Tebow could get the ball down the field, you know, and that's a big part of the reason. Like Chris Leak, his fucking, you know, kind of legend ended when he finished playing college ball. Like the dude was not drafted and no team took him seriously as an undrafted free agent because he could not push the ball down the field. So again, you've got a rocket arm QB, one's left-handed and white, a giant dude. And then you've got Cam who's fucking a rocket arm QB, you know, has the same game. And you're like, I was recruited because they're going to have packages. It's just called the offense at that point.
And Cam is a couple inches like, taller and maybe 20 pounds bigger than Tebow at that time too.
Yeah, probably. But the thing is, it's like what we saw after Tebow's freshman year, right? When he just had those packages. Urban Meyer hitched his wagon to fucking Tim Tebow, right? That's exactly what he did. When Tim Tebow had a press conference, Urban Meyer was there. And Urban Meyer gushed about Tim Tebow all the time. Urban Meyer talked about how, you know, Tim asked to do Bible study. So I said, yes, absolutely. And I'm there every time, you know, like, fuck. I mean, one, fuck Urban Meyer. Like, I cannot stand the man. Didn't like him his last probably 4 years at Ohio State. You know, the game was changing even then. And Urban Meyer refused to change. You know, so I just that I can't in Gainesville because where you saw Urban, you saw Tim. Like, and that's just how it was. And you imagine trying to crack that nut, you know, as the backup, you know, it's fucking nuts, man. Like it's nuts. And I give Cam a lot of credit for going to Gainesville thinking I could win the starting job. A 4 year starter is graduating, but like, dude, you're not beating Tim Tebow. You're not, not at that time. You're not.
He was Mr. Florida. Tim Tebow is Mr. Florida.
Oh, dude, he still is. He is still is, man.
He's from Jacksonville.
Like when Urban got the, yeah, like from around there, right?
Yeah.
But when Urban got the Jaguars job, and Tebow hasn't even sniffed a fucking football field in like 3 years.
Bring him in.
What is the first thing Urban did?
Bring him in.
Brought him in. We're gonna make him a tight end. And in that first preseason game, what did we see? The worst block ever recorded in NFL history.
Sadly, he didn't make the team.
At a position. Sadly. Honestly, if I'm Meyer, and the thing is, there was this huge article written on The Athletic about how like Urban Meyer kind of checked out like five games into that season.
Obviously.
And the only thing he would do is show up to yell at players.
Jesus.
He wasn't present in any of like the position meetings or the offense meetings or the defense meetings. He wasn't there. His coordinators essentially did everything because it's like, hey, I'm getting paid to do this job, so I'm going to do it. I don't know where head coach is. But like when practice hit, Meyer would be out there just to fucking light into people. And it's like, dude, this team is a reflection of your coaching. Mm-hmm. It's bad because you suck. You know, like, I mean, at least if you know you don't want to be there, you've already like helped construct a bad team, which Urban Meyer had control of personnel decisions. I don't know why you give that to a college coach who's never coached a professional game, right? But that's what happened. Hey, man. Hey, Tim. You're going to be our tight end, too. Oh, shucks, coach. I'm just so happy to be here. I'm going to go, you know what? I'm going to get my phone out. I'm going to record this and just say, you know what? Thank you, Jesus. You're the reason I'm here playing for my hometown team. Always wanted to play for the Jaguars. You know, like, fuck. Urban Meyer, Tim Tebow, I hope you both fall into a giant vat of Legos.
Jesus. This is a tweet from Tim Tebow that Kushluk has saved. Pain is painful, but God will use even the hardest and most desolate parts of our lives for a purpose far greater than we can imagine, but only if we let him. Thank you, Tim.
Cool.
Now go fuck yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. If Sky Daddy is so rad, then why is it he's stopping human beings from just eviscerating people with missiles and bombs and bullets and all that shit? And don't give me the whole free choice fucking argument. He's supposed to be an omnipotent being who created the universe, and he can't stop people from. Okay.
If you know what, Tim? The Bible, God has never stopped a war.
No, no. And apparently, according to politicians, God falls down on one side of that war. So,
They don't know God like Tim Tebow does. And apparently, and they've never read the Bible because that's not.
Well, it's
because
Tebow and Jesus be kicking it on the weekends.
I could see that. I could see
that. Yeah. Like Jesus shows up at Tebow's house and he's like, Tim.
Or Jesus is like, Tim Tebow. Let's face it. Yeah. He may be the greatest college player of all time. Bro.
I gotta show up for Tebow.
Come on, dude. There's a few parties that you show up to and a Tebow one that you show up to.
He has a Coke machine in his house. Like, it's amazing. But let's face it, let's go back to the Marcus theory. Let's look at Tim Tebow's face. I don't think he has lips, man. I'm just saying, if real Jesus showed up, no lips Tebow might be a little upset.
Oh, you think Tim Tebow would be Jesus. Real if he saw real Jesus? You think Tim Tebow would be like, you're pulling my leg. You don't look like my hell angel uncle.
Jesus is white.
No. If I had any sort of X-Men power, it would be to be able to find Jesus and bring ethnic Jesus to Tim Tebow and try to convince him that he's Jesus.
Oh, dude, yeah, but make sure he's like speaking like you know, was it Aramaic? And then
yeah,
it's got like an accent, you know. And Tebow's just like, I bet Tebow knows Aramaic.
I bet Tebow totally knows Aramaic, and he's just like ready for Jesus, and Jesus is gonna come, looking like,
bro. He learned it. He learned it from the same tutor with Jim Caviezel, the guy who played Jesus. Mel Gibson's Jesus.
I'm so mad you remember that guy's name. You're totally going to hell for remembering his name. But here, I want to play. Already,
I'm already in hell. I'm living through capitalist America. I don't feel like I can be punished any more than I already am.
Oh, you know, you don't want Satan to tell you to hold his beer.
Oh, dude.
I'll show
Satan would know that I was in the infantry. Yeah, he's like, dude, I don't know how much more I can fuck with you. The U.S. Army already did a lot of it. Thank you. Thank you, Satan.
What if Satan comes and he's like,
I'll take my beating.
Oh, you're good, brother. You're good, brother.
Yeah.
You've seen enough.
Just go sit down. Really go sit down. Yeah.
You're fine. You're fine.
We're good, man.
Good. The worst right, I can do is make you relive your divorce. That's all I can do at this point.
I'm going to send you back to Afghanistan for a couple of years. I kind of have to. It's in the contract. I got to punish you somehow. Oh, fuck me.
But you came out. You came out. Satan's over here trying to give you a pep talk.
He's my hype. And, you know, you're still like fanning off Sam Darnold. It's going to be all right. It's going to be all right.
our fucking nice Satan. Look, and Cam Newton's hat is ridiculous.
Stop the runs. I'm saying to myself, like,
that's me.
I could do it. That's me. I had to get my feet wet in the SEC as a freshman. Four plays a game just to run. Man, I could do that. Fuck. I mean, let's play linebacker early on in my rec ball, and then I transitioned into running back.
Right.
Then that transition to two, I could throw the further. So now you could play quarterback. Right. So these things is a part of my whole thing that embodied who I was as a player.
So you get there and it's not shaping up kind of how what they had told you or the way you envision it.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden you're not getting these 4 to 5 plays a game.
Right.
And so did you have a conversation with Urban?
He didn't want to talk to me. I wasn't important enough for Urban to talk to me. And granted, you got to think about it like this. Do you even have a voice to talk when the person you're trying to talk about is the Heisman front runner?
Yeah.
So I had a conversation with my father to say, like, Pop, it's time to kind of rethink this thing, because I would not have wanted a backup to me to have the energy to say, I only can play if he get hurt. I'm not that type of person.
Right, right. You don't want to put that negative in.
Yeah, I'm an ultimate pro. I'm an ultimate teammate. Like, I wanted people to succeed. You see what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I didn't want Tebow to get hurt. He's the greatest college football player to some people. You know what I'm saying? And it's objective. If not number one, he top five. Right. And Tim Tebow is owed a large portion of who Cam Newton really is. Because just the same way I gave you what sparked my aggression or my competitive nature with Jimmy Clausen, it sparked the same thing with Tim Tebow. Being around Aaron Hernandez, the Pouncey Twins, Chris Rainey, Joe Hayden, Carlos Dunlap, Major Wright, Percy Harvin, like Brandon James, Brandon Spikes, these Lewis Murphy, all these great players that I was around, I would have been a fool not to take what they were doing and what made them great and apply it to my journey in JUCO as well as Auburn.
Right. So some things transpired. You get into a little trouble with a computer, and you end up.
But that wasn't the reason why I left. Reason why I left, like, did I get in trouble? Yes. That was already taken care of.
Okay.
Prior to me leaving.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't get kicked out of
Florida. But see, that's how they framed the story.
Yeah, I didn't get kicked out of Florida.
Okay.
I left Florida.
Okay.
And when Tebow announced that, oh, and by the way, I'm coming back, I said, oh,
it was a no-brainer. Oh, yeah.
I got to leave now. I wasn't playing when you was here. So, and then for Urban's sake, you couldn't even identify who the backup was between me and John Bradley. I'm like, bro, what are we going on? We fighting for scraps? Y'all can have this. Cool. If it was up to me, did I want to leave? Hell no. Because them were my brothers.
Right.
Like, we build real relationships over that 2-year span that I was there. We worked out together. We trained together. We bled together. We cried together. We sweated together. We prepared together.
And I'm seeing guys like Joe Haden play early as a freshman. I said, damn, bro, I would love to have an opportunity to play. Marquise Pouncey playing early. Man, I would have loved to. Aaron Hernandez playing early. I would have loved to be out there. And those things when they're like, bro, like we'll go back to the dorms and have these conversations. Like, bro, that shit was lit. Like, bro, like you see all those people in there. I see them. I said, damn, I wish
I saw them, but that wasn't, they wasn't, yeah, they wasn't cheering for me.
You know, the main, everything, all the reasons why I went to Florida was accomplished other than me playing. And that's why I had to leave. And at that time, they didn't have a transfer portal. So I had to get it out the mud. Urban Meyer had to sign off to where I transferred to.
Right.
He gave certain restrictions. You cannot transfer to in-state school. So FAU, FIU, Florida State,
Miami.
I couldn't go to none of them.
Right.
And I couldn't go
anywhere in SEC.
So I said, how do I clear all that so I can go anywhere? I got to go JUCO. I said, shit, I'm going JUCO. And on top of that, what really ticked me the fuck off was when my father had called Urban to ask for a championship ring. He didn't give me a championship ring. So that really was my driving force to becoming the player who I was. I said, don't worry about it. I'm going to go get my own. Got one at JUCO. Got one in at Auburn. And if I could paint it the way I wanted to paint it, while I was at Auburn, there was an opportunity for Auburn to play Florida in the SEC championship.
That's what you wanted. That's what you wanted, Cam.
No racial slur, but boy, they would have seen the baboon out that motherfucker. I would have showed my whole ass. What? Boy, that's what I wanted. I wanted to prove to them that they fucked up. They made a mistake. I knew that was my point to prove I was better than Tebow. That was my opportunity to prove that y'all fucked up. That was my opportunity to prove that this could have been y'all, but you played me. And there was times where I will be the first person to tell you, while I was at the University of Florida, I was not the maturest person that I needed to be to lead that team.
Right.
And I will take responsibility for that. But who I grew to be, nobody was fucking with me.
Person said he's
Mac.
What I mean, I appreciate the candor. Don't quite. I mean, you can tell me to go fuck myself, Jason, but using baboon in that term, I would not have done that.
He didn't want to say the N-word.
But, yeah, but like, I get that. But see, this is what kills me. I'm glad that that came up because a lot of media outlets made it seem like Cam Newton got arrested for stealing a laptop, and that's why he left Florida. Like that, he did a plea agreement, did some, like, I think community service, and that was the end of it, right? Yeah. And I get why he would transfer out, but see, this is what he didn't mention. Cam Newton was not academically eligible to play his sophomore year. That's why he went to JUCO. You know, because don't tell me another, if he was academically eligible, and granted the transfer rules were different, he would have still had to sit out a year.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell me another SEC school wouldn't have stepped up and immediately been there.
Like, no, that's what he said, that he couldn't go to an SEC school.
Yeah. And it's because he was not academically eligible. Cam Newton was one of the guys that came out who rarely went to class, did not meet with his academic tutors. Right. He was one of those guys. You know who the other one was? Aaron fucking Hernandez was the other one.
I mean, those are the ones that they talk about. I mean,
yeah,
let's be honest. Most of dudes, they're not going to class.
There is a lot of them that don't. Well, I think it's changed now. At the time, absolutely. But now with kind of like the spotlight that's on college football, right? And how it is. I mean, dude, coaches. When we talk about coaches and a coaching staff,
mm-hmm.
we're not just talking position coaches and coordinators anymore. Mm-mm. They have another 10 people that they call like video coordinators, quality mm-hmm. assistance coaches. You know what they do outside of football? They are in classrooms to ensure that their players are where they're supposed to be.
Well, I mean, Coach Will came on the show and talked about his time at Cal with some Cal basketball players and how
mm-hmm.
We even had class with
Sharif Abdur-Rahim. Sharif.
I
love that, dude. And that's what I love. I love when Coach Will's on, because like he made me go down, like, and I'm like, okay, he's talking about some folks. Like Jason was more in the area. He kind of knows what's going on. I'm like, I'm fucking clueless. So here we go. Mm-hmm. Oh, God damn. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Will went to Cal when like everybody, Will was there when Tony Gonzalez was there. The 90s.
Dude. And see, that's okay. Hold on. Connor, Matt Leinart is famous for taking a basket weaving class. I will one up that with someone even dumber. Dr. Claw, back me up on this. Andy Katzenmoyer was supposed to be the second coming of Dick Butkus in the late 90s. Okay. And JB, yes, he was there for Kid. We had it. Yeah. Like that was a big part of the last episode Coach Will was on. We talked heavily.
I think he was a little older.
Andy Katzenmoyer was a middle linebacker for the Buckeyes, and he was my hero when I was in high school. Okay. His freshman and sophomore year, he just owned it. Just demolished college football. Junior year, played with a lot of injuries, decided he didn't like, watching film or reading the playbook either, and thought he can get away on talent, and he did not do well. So he declares for the draft after his junior year, right? And I had a football clinic I went to between his sophomore and junior year of college, and Andy Katzenmoyer was the star guest. And we are, JB, Katzenmoyer got hurt in the pros, not in college. But the thing is, he was on a very short leash, and I'll get to that. So when these pro players come to these clinics, it's kind of so young kids like myself at the time could pick their brains. Mm-hmm. Like, if you see this, how do you react to it? If you see this, like, what do you do? I was like, hey, Andy, I'm a big fan. You know, keep in mind, I'm there with kids from like Pennsylvania, Illinois. It's like a multi-state clinic. And it's for like linebackers, defensive ends, and safeties, you know, shit like that. And I was like, hey, we play like kind of like a base 4-4. And he dead ass goes, I don't know what that is. And I was just like, and I go, that's how, man. It's kind of crazy. Drop back and pass. And like I'm looking around all the other kids, and like this kid from he was from Champaign, Illinois. He's like, well, yeah, you don't. He's like, well, that's not like my job on the field, you know. Like I hit things, and this kid's like, dude, I hit things too. He's like, but I hit a lot of things. And he's like, all right, man. What's your question? Right?
And, now you're
and
like,
I was just like, well, so my question is essentially formatted like, if you see a pulling guard, right, what do you do? What's kind of the technique when you see like a fullback fill the hole, right? Or you see the center do a slide, right? And Katzenmoyer just looks at me and goes, I'll just blow through it, bro. Okay. So his sophomore year, he had to take 3 extra classes during the summer to be academically eligible to play his junior year. One of those was AIDS awareness. And, you know, it's like a 4-week summer course. You have to write a final paper. Andy Katzenmoyer showed up with a little box full of condoms. I said, hey, man, if you don't want to get AIDS, wrap it up. Here's some condoms. And I only know about this because, again, he's supposed to be the second coming of Dick Butkus.
Yeah.
And Sports Illustrated wrote about his academic issues, right? Mm. And do you want to hear the most ironic part about this, Jason?
Mm-hmm.
His dad is like an astrophysicist and his mother's a Ooh. Doctor. And he's dumb Ooh. As a brick. Now, JB, you're talking about the neck injury he had. He did. But he rolled into camp with Bill Belichick. Or not Belichick. It was Pete Carroll at the time. Okay? with Pete fucking Carroll. No, I'm sorry. It was actually Bill Parcells. I apologize, everybody. My age is showing, and I've had some adult beverages. He showed up to camp with Bill Parcells without having read the playbook, without having like done his homework, as a lot of rookies do. Even then, a lot of rookies were like, dude, I got to get into this. I cannot show up and have coach like see that I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Right. And this is Bill Parcells, guys. This is the guy who called Terry Glenn a she because he dropped two passes in a summer practice. And at the time, he was like a top five guy for Ohio State receiving, you know, like Jesus Christ. But he was put on special teams because he was missing tackles. He thought he could, you know, just blow through it, bro. And was getting lit up, just lit the fuck up, and gets put on special teams and actually went to Bill Parcells and said, I don't play special teams, coach. And Parcells sat his ass until like week four. Oof. Like just stapled to the
Hey, team. You know what else you don't
and
do?
And then he did.
Play.
Yeah. And the thing is, his neck injury, Jason, came because he decided to – you remember Chuck Cecil, safety for the Cardinals and Oilers, the man who kind of was the king of the crown hit where he would lead with his head and hit you right in the sternum, injured a lot of players that way. Andy Cantsmore didn't really know how to tackle, so he led with his fucking head. And he realized – these NFL players are all brick shithouses, and it literally he ended up with a broken vertebrae.
Does he walk? Can he walk?
Mm-hmm. Dude, I broke two vertebrae in my neck from jumping. Oh. But they just do a fusion, and then, you know, you have to be very careful. Yeah, see, Mark, like, it's Parcells did not put up with that shit. Parcells didn't like rookies. Like, if I can equate any NFL coach to an NBA coach, it was Parcells, because there are so many, like, NBA coaches that hate playing rookies. And I'm like, why? They're going to make rookie mistakes. I get it, but they bring something to the team, you know? But, like, Parcells would be like, rookie? All right, cool. You'll play special teams for 3 years, and then I'll put you in the starting lineup, you know? Like, that was just
Parcells.
Unless
you're LT, right? Unless you're LT.
Yeah, well.
Well, no, Parcells didn't draft LT, right?
I don't believe so.
I think LT is there like a year before Parcells.
But Parcells is the guy that saw the wrecking ball that was LT.
I mean,
and literally just was like, you know what, dude? Go do you. And LT's like, all right, man, let's go. You know, and he just did LT.
Cocaine. Dr.
Cocaine.
That's all I hear when
I mean, it was
highlights.
Dude, I loved him in Any Given Sunday. I'm not going to lie. I loved him in Any Given Sunday.
we went too long on the main show, and we have to go to the champagne room where we're going to open up the phone lines. We promised embarrassing stories. You guys can call in.
Yes.
We don't know your names. It does not identify you on the phone. So you can call
Jason.
In,
like, we were wrong.
From
Joey Parcells corrected us. Parcells drafted LT. Parcells was the guy that the coach that replaced the guy who lost the Miracle of the Meadowlands in '76.
So good call. Okay,
I appreciate that, Joey.
Joey's a buzzkill.
Joey and everybody in chat, I think you all have seen Jason and I. We can reach back into the Wayback Machine pretty well 80% of the time. But there's that 20%. We need your help.
Yeah.
So
and
we want you to correct us. We want that.
And keep in mind, there's no reason why we should remember 44 years ago. Because LT came out in 80?
No.
Or 79.
What year? Yeah, the year before I was born, I believe.
Yeah, he came out in like 80.
He was an 80. He was an 80s draftee.
Yeah, Joe Pisarcik was a quarterback. You know who returned that fumble? Herm Edwards returned.
Goddamn Herm Edwards.
Herm Edwards is from California.
Before we go, I'm going to do some quick hits. Herm Edwards is facing a 5-year show cause for the shit that went down at Arizona State before he was fired.
Oh, really?
We're looking at the Arizona. Oh, yeah. or that he's possibly going to Salt Lake City. Ew. And after stating, and this is base centric, so Jason, back in the screen too, so I can see the look on your face when I say this. We know that the A's are playing their last season at the Coliseum, and they said, horrible. We're just going to play as the Athletics. We're going to play as the Athletics until our new stadium in Vegas is built. And keep in mind, no ground has been broken and no deal has been made to move Oakland to Vegas.
And next year they're playing in SAC, right? Is that the thing they're playing in SAC next year?
Yeah. But get this. Before that was even done, before they signed the agreement with the city of Sacramento to play in a 14,000 seat AAA stadium, they put in a copyright for the Sacramento Athletics, Sacramento A's, and SAC A's 15 minutes after they put out, we're just going to play as the Athletics. And before the Sacramento deal was solidified.
I will say this as a Giants fan. Okay, go ahead.
And the man said, we plan on increasing payroll to $120 million our second year in San Francisco so we can have a winner when we go to Vegas. And I'm like, double your payroll in 2 years playing in a 14,000-seat stadium.
I mean, if you got long money,
you no,
got
you're
long
not. Money.
He I don't know if the owner's got money that long. Does he have money that long?
Dude, the owner of the A's is the guy who owns Gap in the Associated
He's got
Brands.
Long money. He's got a really
but
long money.
But he's never put money into that team. Never no. put money into that
Maybe
team.
Because this is what he wanted hey. All along.
Well, this dude, is that's the problem thing.
With... Go ahead.
With him moving to Sacramento instead of Salt Lake City, because Salt Lake City was going to be there. Like I said last week, he moves gross. To Salt Lake City. Regional TV deal is done. And he, yeah, gross. Yeah. He goes to Sacramento. He's going to keep about 80% of it. I think the deal they negotiated was 85%. So not bad, right? But the thing is, he's run this team into the ground so long, he wasn't even eligible for the revenue sharing. Next year, revenue sharing kicks back in for him. Like, the thing is, changed it because of Carl Polhad, the former owner. After the World Series win in 91, he ran his team into the ground and was just like, I'll just continue to collect this revenue sharing and not put it into the team. I'll just pocket it. So now, if you collect it for 5 years without showing an increase in payroll, you are immediately ineligible for it for three. So that's what this dickhead's done. Next year is the end of that like 3 year period. So he can start drawing revenue sharing again.
It sounds look.
Right? And then
he and everyone else wanted out of Oakland because sadly where it's located, and I've said this before, what transportation wise, it's beautiful. It's amazing. But now it's about the experience. When I was at my first year, it was the year we tried to ride on the racetrack at Vegas Speedway. So that was my second year at EDC. I was with one of the higher ups at the food and beverage company that run the stadium. So with stadiums, there's a lot of different hands involved that actually run it. And it's not the team in the way that you think it is. But that's a whole other conversation. And so they were walking me around the grounds because you kind of have to know where everything's going to be, right? There's like, I don't know, 2,000 points of sale that I had to, you know where they were when I got a call.
Yeah, it's kind of fucking nuts. Like,
right? And so they're taking me around the place and they're telling me about, because it's a racetrack, and they're like, you know, we're trying to get young people to the racetrack, so we're taking out all these seats and we're going to put a pool here. I was like, that doesn't sound very NASCAR-y. They're like, yeah, young people don't like NASCAR, but they like experiences. So we're going to make this experience. So when you go see the A's, for years, the experience was the A's. And then you got the fuck home.
The team.
There was nothing. Mm-hmm. There's nothing. And where that is, and Oakland's a bigger city. San Francisco, just so you get an idea of the differences of the cities, where the Giants and Niners played for years was in a suburb kind of outside of the city of San Francisco. It was pretty much near South City, which is where South San Francisco. Okay. It was pretty far, but it was technically in San Francisco, and it was in a neighborhood, and there was nothing around it, and it was in kind of a bad neighborhood. When they moved that stadium, they moved it in, not even in the heart of downtown. They moved it on the water, and they built a world around it. Really nice apartments, shopping, cool bars. So there's a whole, now you can have an experience.
Yeah, it's a district.
You were never able to do that.
District.
It was a land, it's all landfill. Water. Anyway, so, and that was a ghetto too. And so anyway, where the A's are, you would have to tear down low-income housing. That's not going to happen. Yep. Right?
You'd be surprised. That's exactly what happened in D.C. That's exactly what happened in D.C. when they built Capital One.
It's not happening in California.
Okay. You know California better than I do.
Yeah.
Listen, all I know is Gavin Newsom is the governor there. And
and you know, for all you hate these guys as much as you want, but they're just not going to tear down, you know, a bunch of housing that is not the best, right? And there's neighborhoods there, and you have to tear down all those houses too. This ain't, I don't know, you said Capital One, that's pretty recent, but and I don't know how bad those
Capital One was 21 years ago. And remember, they built in Chinatown when they built Capital One in DC.
It's kind of nice. Well,
the thing is, when they built Capital One, it displaced 6,000 Chinese families because they were living in low-income housing. And they were like, well, it's not a big deal if they have to, like, move, you know? And they literally
I don't know the terms. I don't know if it's Chavez Ravine where, you know, it's like, hey, we're bulldozing whatever's left.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't know if it's, you know, we don't have time to get into the history of Chavez Ravine where the Dodgers play. But until Fernando Valenzuela came there, a lot of Mexicans never even watched the Dodgers. Because of the history of displacing so many families.
I read a book about that, dude, and it's fucking phenomenal.
It's a whole episode of itself.
Yeah, by itself. And everybody, when Oakland, I say it's phenomenal, I meant the book, not what happened. Okay?
Not the destruction of that area.
Yeah.
But when you look at where Oakland is, there's never been bars in that area. There's never been anything for you to do other than get the fuck out of it as quick as possible, right? And go home.
Yeah.
And they tried for a minute when the Raiders were still there and the Warriors were there to build this little plaza thing. And there was a Walmart there and In-N-Out. And now In-N-Out just left. Walmart's been gone for some time, and once the Raiders left, you really saw the decline. The Warriors were soon after, and the Warriors went right next to the Giants.
That's the thing, Jason. This is what killed me. The Raiders made their intention to leave before the Warriors did, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the Warriors had signed their deal to build their stadium before the Raiders officially got the okay to go to Vegas. So I think that was probably worse for the city of Oakland because you had this team that's been there for how long? And it just is coming off this run of just dominance, you know, and the Raiders, they still are kind of bad, you know, they are.
They haven't been the '80s, those moves, Al Davis, I mean, the Raiders, building all that extra space for nothing. It didn't work well for baseball. The A's changing ownership. When I was a kid growing up in the East, I'm from the East Bay. Like, I was born in Oakland. I grew up in Richmond, California. It's the East Bay.
I'm just repping where you live, Jason.
You know, West Coast.
Because I love you.
Hometown. The A's were breaking attendance records in the Bash Brother 80s.
Oh, yeah.
When they were going to the series. People always say winning series. They won one. But
they were there consistently. They were consistent winners. And it was
a dominant team.
Yeah, and then Billy Beane's time there too. Fucking phenomenal teams.
You're talking about the Moneyball years.
Yeah.
But think, let's just go back to the 80s before the Moneyball. They were packing it during the Moneyball years as well.
Yeah.
But when you go back to those 80s and 90s teams of the A's, when they were literally breaking attendance records, you know, for people coming up to that stadium before they built Mount Davis, the Raiders are still in LA at this time. You know, they were the dominant sports franchise in the area. The Bay Bridge, even though it's not even that long and it's not that far for us to San Francisco, but that bridge is a demarcating line.
I'm going to stop you right there. I drove across that bridge twice. Mm-hmm. It's long enough.
It's not that long.
Bullshit, dude. I was actually at the World Series game.
Oh, in 89?
When the earthquake hit.
Oh, you were terrified. That's why. Fair enough.
I was 8 years old and I had to drive across that fucking thing to go to the stadium. And I'm like, we have to drive across the goddamn thing back. And the world just shook. This is bullshit. And I was like, I don't want to come back out to California again. I don't want to do it. Send me back to Ohio.
Take the long way back through San Jose. My dad got stuck on the other side during the earthquake. He was working in San Francisco. You take the long way back through San Jose. But the point is.
The nicest thing my dad ever did. We lived in Sacramento and he took me to a fucking World Series game in the Bay. Nicest thing he's done for me in my entire life. I'm jealous.
I'm a Giants fan, and what really sucks about that is growing up in the East Bay, all my friends were A's fans. That World Series is still a tough one. But I will say this, A's fans are real ass fans. And when I say real ass fans, there's a few places I've been on this planet where I've met fans. And I'll tell you the cities that I'm like, yeah, Boston, they may not be the best fan. Those are real ass fans.
Yeah, real ass races.
Yeah, that too. But those are some real ass fans.
Yeah.
What's another city with some real ass fans?
Cleveland better be in your fucking list there, Jason.
You're the only, like, you and Clara are the only Cleveland fans I've ever met.
Bro.
Yeah, I didn't play too many shows in that area, and when I did, I was around like metal people that didn't do sports.
Yeah, but dude, Cleveland, real ass fans, dude.
I'll take your word for it. Same thing with everywhere I've ever played in Ohio, and I played a f ton of shows in places in Ohio that you've probably never been to, that I had no business being in. Lima. You ever spent time in Lima?
Okay, first off, it's pronounced Lima in Ohio.
Fine. Fine.
And yes, I've been there because you know what the biggest industry in Lima, Ohio is?
Meth.
No. Well, that might be the second largest. The biggest one is they make Strikers, Army fighting vehicles.
Oh, didn't know that. They make Depression.
Oh, fuck, they're
really good.
It's Northwestern Ohio.
I played shows in Kent, Ohio.
I went to school there my senior year of high school. That's what I did. I go to class at Kent State and then drive back for football practice.
Okay, Sean Moon says Chicago has some good fans.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say Philly, but they're just mean. And there's something about the meanness of those people in that whole region I don't dig.
Dude, Philly's different, but they are real as shit. See, like for me, I look at, and what this is what we're going to wrap up with so we can go do Champagne Room, right? Mm-hmm. Fake ass fans. I'm going to fucking lay out.
Anyone that's a baseball fan in Texas.
I'm getting to that.
I don't believe you.
I'm going fucking five, my bottom five. This is what I call fake ass fans. Seattle Seahawks.
Ooh, you think so?
When they're good, they're out. When they're bad, not so much.
They love.
Carolina Panthers fans.
That's fair.
When they're winning, you see a lot of Panthers, like teal, black, and white.
Yeah.
And then when they're losing, I see all the old Washington and Atlanta jerseys that they wore before they got a team.
all the Duke in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, yes, okay. I'll give you that.
So there's two. Clippers, definitely. Clippers, definitely.
You're not
okay. My four is probably going to be Mets fans. And don't, if you're a Mets fan, fuck off. Right? When they're winning, when Piazza was there, you are all fucking, hey! You know, and now it's like, because they're still shit, even with Steve Phillips on the team, you know, you have one of the most beautiful stadiums in the goddamn league for Citi Field. And it is. I've been there 3 times. I love Citi Field. I can still go. I can walk up day of the game, Jason, and get a ticket for $12 in New York City.
That's dope.
Right?
To me, that's dope.
That is.
If I get to take my kid, because we've got to go to New York to do some stuff, some TIR show stuff later in the year. If I could take my kid to a game, any game.
Okay, I'm going to tell you right now, Jason, take him to Coney Island. Take him to the Cyclones. It's a single A team. One of the
I'm going to take him to the Oakland A's in Sacramento. That stadium is right off the freeway, Mac.
Yeah. Yeah,
you,
I know.
I said you lived in Sacramento. So yeah, it's right there before you hit downtown.
And I've seen all the fucking the buildup for it because like it has to host a AAA team. So they had to expand it a bit, especially since, you know, the new agreement between minor league baseball and major league baseball. Mm-hmm. They had to like add seats and some other, you know, bells and whistles. And the thing is, the city owns the stadium. So it's on the city's tab that they have to do it. So mm-hmm. they can't go to the you know, the team to ask them to do it, because the team could say, nope, I'm not going to do it. And if you don't fix it, I can leave and go somewhere else. But the city actually did it. And I think there's probably going to be more, you know, they're probably going to try and expand it again by probably get it to 20,000. Right.
A big expansion.
I know. But see, the thing is, they're going to have to do it. You're going to want to make it as cost effective as you can, which means I need every seat filled. And the more seats I can get filled, the more money I'm going to generate off it. You know?
I get it, but
so it's going to be a shit show. Here's my last one, my number five, Houston mm-hmm. Texans fans, absolute fucking worst. And it's tied with Texas Rangers fans, because you're absolutely right. Texas Rangers baseball fans, when they're bad, will not fucking show up.
You but don't of see course, any of those hands.
In year two of the mm-hmm. brand new stadium, they're fucking packing asses, because what did the Rangers end up doing last year? Winning the fucking World Series. But when they're bad, and they have been bad for fucking a decade plus before that, dude, nobody went to those games.
No one went to those games. You know who actually has good fans that I slept on? New Orleans Saints fans.
Oh, dude, no. Those are some hardcore fans.
Those are hardcore fans. Hardcore. Working in the Gulf of Mexico blew my mind. How many people love – you know who loves New Orleans Saints? Cedric Johnson. Hardcore Saints fan.
Well, on that note, Jason, we have to go do Champagne Room.
We have to do Champagne Room. Also, I have to say it, honorable mention, real-ass fans, I really hate saying this out loud. It hurts. I just want you to know this is hurting my soul to say this. It hurts my soul to say this, but you guys are real Laker fans.
They are.
If you're a Laker fan, you are a Laker fan. You were a Laker fan in the Van Exel years. You were a Laker fan. You are a Laker fan.
When they brought in Karl Malone and Gary Payton at the tail end of their career.
You were a Laker fan then. You're a Laker fan. Warriors fans, you're fly by night. Let's be honest. I didn't know. I think I said this on this show, and I'll say it again. I thought that stadium where the Warriors played in Oakland was where the Ice Capades was. I didn't know a professional team was there, because Warriors games didn't come on television.
Because Jason's like, I know Mitch Richmond plays for the Warriors, but where the fuck do they play a game at?
Didn't know. I'm like, where do these Golden State guys play? It must be LA. Oh.
San Jose, right? What? What?
You didn't know. Yes. Because you know how like you drive on the freeway and there's like a sign and it's like, live in concert, Barbra Streisand sings the hits. They never had the Warriors. Look at me. Look at me. They didn't come on television.
God, you gotta love
I'm old enough to remember when basketball was tape delayed. If you know who Joe Barry Carroll is and you're my age, either your parent was a huge fan and you had season tickets or something, or you're like Coach Will and you were just like a basketball fan. Because to watch a Warriors game was on like a public, not public access, but like one of those regular UHF channels.
It was like a regional, you know?
Yeah,
like,
it was a regional channel. It was not a network affiliate that played. This is, yeah, no. You were. That's why everyone my age is a Laker fan. You can go to the Bay Area right now and see so many Laker jerseys and Warrior haters, especially dudes my age and a little younger, because no one knew the Warriors were there until 89 when Mitch Richmond, Chris Mullin, and Tim Hardaway were mm-hmm. making the playoffs.
Yeah, run TMC.
Don Nelson years. Until then, there was no, just like there was no team in Sacramento for how long. Like, you heard of them. I remember my grandmother had to go to a convention for something, and she was staying at a hotel with the Kings.
Mm-hmm.
And
I remember they were the team when I was going there to see my dad.
Mm-hmm.
They were the team that had the names at the bottom of the jerseys. And I'm like, huh?
Dude,
and
the California teams, no one watched the Clippers unless you were a big time college fan. You were like going to see what happened with Danny Manning and his horrible knees.
Yes.
No one knew the Kings. The Kings moved to California in the 80s, right?
I believe it was 82 or 83, wasn't it? From Kansas City.
They were relatively a newer team. And no, dude, no one cared about the Kings until Chris Webber got there.
Okay, that was the first Google search. 1985.
Yeah, crazy. Dude. Think about that. These California, the Lakers, the Lakers were the only California team that mattered, and they were the only California team that people watched. And I hate to say it, Warriors fans, a lot of you guys jumped on that bandwagon.
Dude, and when you think about it, before we go, look at the California basketball teams. Kings moved after like splitting time, like Mark said, between Kansas City and Omaha, which I don't quite mm-hmm. get because they're not exactly close. Mm-mm. Then you had the Lakers move from Minneapolis
years ago.
You know, in the 50s, I believe. Mm-hmm. They were the first NBA team to make the westward trek.
Mm-hmm.
Clippers started in San Diego, moved mm-hmm. to LA for whatever fucking reason. And Golden State was there, right? Like, that's where they started, correct? Or did the Warriors move?
If I'm not mistaken, the Warriors start in California somewhere, but their whole thing was they were going to move around the state.
Gotcha.
And there's yeah. they used to play. They actually used to play in San Francisco.
Yeah, because didn't they share?
I don't know who they shared the stadium with, but
they shared a stadium with the University of San Francisco, because that was maybe the big knock when they first started. Because remember, Bill Russell went to USF.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And when he, like, I think he played like at the very end of his career, maybe not. Somebody bitched about it because they're like, dude, it was like 9,000 seats. You know, like it was tiny as shit.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, they were called the San Francisco Warriors for one team, and I don't think that was the year they won the championship. And the Clippers stadium is called the San Diego Sports Complex, and we did a GABA show there when I was on tour with Yo GABA, and they've done no renovations to that place since the Clippers left. So on the walls, there's still images of the like San Diego Clippers.
Wow, dude. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And that was in what year was that there? 2009.
Wow.
Yeah. It's just a big ass empty arena that they just do like motocross and all this other goofy stuff in.
All right, we should do Champagne Room.
Let's do the Champagne Room. Thank you guys for hanging out with us. We'll see a lot of you soon. If you are watching this show on the live stream, if you want to hang out with us, if you want to call into the champagne room and tell us an embarrassing sex story.
Or any embarrassing story.
And any embarrassing story. Like that time you got your penis caught in the dishwasher. Happens to the best of us. There's only one way to do it. Become a patron for as little as $3 a month or $30 for the year. You can make sure we can continue to do this insanity. And you can have access to Champagne Rooms past and present. Join us for movie night, which is coming up. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, just click the membership box. I think it's like $4.99. Bam, you have access to all the Champagne Rooms. So let's get to having some fun.
And before we head out, Jason, the Warriors started in Philly. Philly?
They were in Philly first?
Yes.
Nothing started on the West Coast, huh?
Nothing. So literally one basketball team.
Just the Raiders. Just the Raiders and the Niners started on the West
Coast. One basketball team out of four started in Cali. And it's the one that wasn't relevant until a guy who started Microsoft bought them.
Freaking Clippers, dude. Maybe we should all be Clippers fans.
No. Go Cavs, bitch. Bing.
Oh. And on that note, we are out.
Out.